Oh, yeah. Cheers, by the way.
Hey.
So. Yes, cheers.
Oh, he's geared up. Did you do something special this time for number three?
Wait and see.
All right.
All right, here we go. Oh, of course, now it's not going to fucking play.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. Well, this sucks.
Ruined my day.
See, I can't let it go.
As the computer's winning.
As an IT guy, I can't let the fucking machine win, right?
Yeah, machine is winning.
I know exactly what you're saying. I'm like, there. What?
How is this not fucking working? It's so annoying.
I control you. I'm IT, motherfucker. Exactly.
You're supposed to be working. Ah, fuck it.
2 hours later.
Just hum it.
I've lost interest.
When a form of music that our children like becomes linked with ghoulish images and violent theatrics, it demands our attention. Hundreds of thousands of teenagers are locked onto so-called heavy metal music.
I grew up metalhead. I love 80s. Yeah, 80s metal, like Metallica. Yeah.
What do you call this?
Well, this piece is called I Lick My Love Pump.
It's going to be abrasive, it's going to be sickening, it's going to be hard to listen to, it's going to be aggressive, and it's going to fucking kick you in the fucking balls with a pussy.
A one, a two, three.
Yeah, so hey, episode 3 of Somewhere in Time podcast. Welcome, everybody.
Good evening.
We're back. I'm back. I'm Eric. There's Joe over there and Tim. And there's a special guest on the microphone, on one of the microphones. Say your name, dude.
I'm Keith. I was expecting intro music. You know, I mean, that's my entrance. Fuckers.
I fucked it up once.
What kind of chicken shit operation is this, man? Somebody call IT. But I'm Keith. I'm an old friend of these guys. We've played many shows together and gone to a whole bunch of shows together. So
yeah, absolutely.
But the difference is I come from more of the punk side of things, so yeah. I'll be offering the counter argument to their wrong opinions, because
we realize that on all these shows we're agreeing that all these albums kick ass, and these are the best albums from each of one of these artists, and there's nobody to argue that the point that we're wrong. So
I got a strong feeling this episode we're all going to be agreeing on everything except for maybe one of them.
We'll see.
I already disagree with that.
All right, you're wrong.
Keith was one of the ones who chimed in about the New Order not being as good as the Legacy, which we disagreed with. We said the Legacy is not as good as the New Order.
There's so many negatives. Wait, he likes the Legacy better, and we like the New Order better.
The Legacy is better.
See,
according to Keith,
he basically jumped our shit when we said
we used science to figure out that you were wrong, because they play more of the New Order.
They play more of the new one because the lead singer that wrote all the lyrics from the
This is why you're invited to this part.
We already got to break it up because we talked about that album.
All right, let's get to it.
I'm just saying, what are we starting with? That's why he's here, because
somebody throw down.
He offers
so that. Hard to get Keith riled up like this. I'm glad we got that. Keith, just normally one of the quietest, least opinionated people I know.
Right. Look, that punk background made him so mellow, chill. Yeah, so Keith used to play in punk band, and we talked about our band Instinct back in the day, and our band was pure metal.
Yeah,
and but we used to play a lot of shows with Slaves to Society,
because we went to high school together. Well, Keith and I did it.
Yeah, Keith and Joe went to high school together, and there were some good times back in the day. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun playing Last Caress twice together, I think we did.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Keith... Yeah, Keith didn't perform with us, but we pulled our singer on stage and had him sing for us. So
We went over a couple of punk crowds, actually.
Yeah, did we?
Because I remember we played a show and I had double bass, and people were laughing at my double bass kit. They're like, oh, look at the metal guy with double bass. I was like, shut up, man. It's awesome. And
I love Tim's voice for people that
shut up. That's exactly, I bet it's exactly how I sounded too. Shut up. Just shut up.
Yes, we won over all 13 of those people that were at our shows.
We had a
and that includes the band.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Hey, they were won over. That's what matters.
The only time girls saw us play was when we played with his band.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so here we are, episode 3. We're going to talk about some more albums this time, of course, from the year 1988, continuing that retrospective episodes of 1988 albums.
That was 30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. But so this episode, we're going to talk about South of Heaven by Slayer, How Will I Laugh Tomorrow When I Can't Even Smile Today by Suicidal Tendencies, and Survive by Nuclear Assault. So.
What about the...
There'll be an honorable mention. Yeah.
Don't forget.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. We'll get to that. We'll get to
that. It's not worth mentioning yet.
It's honorable.
Yeah.
But not it's worth honorable. Mentioning yet.
No, not yet. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. So okay. You want to start with Slayer?
Sure.
Slayer! Right.
Yeah.
Fucking Slayer! So Slayer, South of Heaven was released on July 5th as a summer album. I don't remember it coming out. I don't remember. I mean, I remember listening to the hell out of it, but I don't remember when it came. Like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I can tell you how that happened, but we'll go ahead and continue.
But got to number 57 on the U.S. charts. It actually isn't bad for
that's
them.
Not bad. I mean,
57 is pretty good for a thrash band in 88. And that was before Justice, right? So that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
One thing I haven't talked about with all these albums is what the number one album of that, that week when it came out, what the number one album was that week.
What was it?
It was Van Halen, OU812.
Jeez.
Van Hagar.
Yeah.
I can't think of a way to connect those two albums.
No.
There's no 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon for that or whatever it's called.
I don't think. Yeah.
Well, so Tim, why don't you talk?
Okay. When this album came out in 88, I was not really a Slayer fan.
Mm.
I had Rain and Blood and I liked parts of it, but in 88, I liked it eventually, but it took me a while to come around. It was too much for me at the time. It was just too much. It was like, I like the heavier parts, but the super fast stuff, I was like, I don't know about this. So this guy at school, and I was in high school at the time. When this came out, I was just going into 12th grade. So he had the cassette and I was hanging out with this other guy. This other guy, we always fought about, he was a big glam guy. This is a different friend. And I was a thrash, full on metal guy. And we argued constantly about what was better. And I was like, Metallica and Slayer are going to stand the test of time. Your crap's not going to last more than a week.
And you were right.
I was right.
Yeah.
It was obvious.
His stuff has an XM station.
Yeah. Yeah. So and actually there were two guys who were glam guys and I was the metal guy and we all rode in the same car to and from school. I had to ride in the back seat. This guy rode in the front seat. So I got the cassette and I said, can we listen to this? And he put it in and can we listen to this, please? So he put it in, but he put it in and it was rewound to side two, which starts with Ghosts of War. And Ghosts of War starts with this weird thing where like it sounds like the speakers aren't turned on or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of echoey.
It's like everything's turned off.
Right, right.
So he turns the stereo way up. You know, I was like, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with this thing? And then it comes slamming in. It's like, God, and he gets all mad. God damn it. And he's like, fucking Slayer suck. And he got through that song and the next song came on and he ejected the tape and threw it at me. And he's like, sucks. was like, man, this guy, asshole.
And then he put in Poison.
He put in some other shit. And then I got home and I played side one, and side one of that album is a lot better than side two.
Oh yeah.
Cause I wasn't that impressed with side two, even in, you know, in the car, I was like, this isn't like great. Like Ghost War was great, but the rest of it was kind of like, I don't know, but goddamn, side one was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So I grabbed you, Eric, and I said, I know neither of us really like Slayer, but this is really good.
Yeah.
And I think it was because they did Rain in Blood and they kind of took it as fast as it could go. And I think the only thing they could do from there was kind of slow it down a little bit and add some dynamics and add some different, you know, just different sounds. And it was, to me, it was like, this is so much better than Rain in Blood.
Well, did Rick Rubin produce Rain in Blood also?
He did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he kind of fixed them because the stuff before that was all drenched in reverb.
Well, yeah, we could talk. I mean, I listen to, you know, whenever we do these, I listen to their catalog and I went back to like Show No Mercy and God, Show No Mercy sucks.
Like, yeah.
You talked about glam. There were some riffs on that album that almost sounded glam. Like, I was like, what is this? This isn't even, kind of sounds like Slayer. Like, but geez. Yeah, their first album is not good.
Well, Venom's album, Welcome to Hell, I'm guessing they were fans of Venom.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
And they have a lot of riffs that were very glammy sounding too.
Yeah.
On that album. Yeah. Even though they're also, you know, heavy and fast in other parts.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really drenched in reverb though. That was like the vocals were just so much reverb and so much echo. And
did Rick Rubin produce that album?
No, he produced the first album he produced for them was for Slayer. I mean, it was Rain and Blood.
Yeah.
And he just basically said, we're taking all that reverb out and we're letting the instruments kind of stand out more and making this really dry so we can hear everything.
Yeah.
And it helped a lot.
So Keith, you think this is their best album? Didn't you say that?
I mean, that's a toss up. I would honestly not say South of Heaven is their best. I'd say Rain and Blood. And then I'd even say Seasons is even better than South.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like Rain and Blood and Seasons of the Abyss better.
That's funny because I went back and I listened to everything all the way up to the most recent album, which the most recent album is not very good. But I actually found myself like digging the two before that, and I was thinking, man, I don't know. Rain and Blood is good. There's some great songs on that album, but I'd probably put it like number four, quite honestly.
Gee.
I know it's crazy, but I think South of Heaven and Seasons.
Those three.
What's that?
86 to 90. That's, I'd have it Seasons, Rain and Blood, and then South of Heaven.
I think that's their peak for sure.
Yeah, of course. I think that obviously those are the big three that people always talk about, but I don't know. Rain and Blood to me is, it's got a couple other classics, but to me, I don't know. South of Heaven and Seasons are my big two. And then, you know, if I go back and like, I actually liked Christ Illusion a lot, which kind of caught me off guard. I didn't like, there were a bunch of songs that I'm like, that's pretty damn good. so I might even like that better than Rain and Blood. People are going to crucify me for that. No pun intended, but,
Well, Divine Intervention, I like a lot too. That's one of my favorites.
That was another one that I'd listened to and I didn't really remember it being great, but it was a lot better than I remember it being.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
The thing I noticed most on the listening to this again a couple times, the drumming is just, it's too much for me.
What?
Every riff, every bar ends in a mega fast Lombardo drum solo, basically. And it's like, come on, dude. We get it.
There was a lot of showing off going on back then.
Yeah. That album is the worst for that. Also, the solos are fucking horrible on this album.
Yeah, they should not have done them. Great.
They're the worst solos that they've done, I think, on any of their albums.
Well,
even Rain and Blood, they don't try to do as much, so the solos kind of fit better.
This is another one of those albums we talked about last episode with Danzig. There were a couple songs on that album where the solo was in one channel. I think every solo on this album is in one channel. Like, you could actually take, if you're listening to earbuds, you could take one of your earbuds out and just hear the rhythm part.
Yeah.
Oh, and then so that's the key.
Solo. If you want to listen to it, maybe you'll like it more, Joe, if you listen to it without just one channel.
Yeah, I think, that first side of this, and I know people listen to CDs and there's not really sides anymore, but that first side of this is so good. I mean, song for song, it's like, geez, god damn.
Yeah, I think some of my favorite songs by them are the first half of this album. Like, if I'm ranking my favorite Slayer songs. It's half of this album.
As you say that, I would say Seasons. It's the reason why I think Seasons is better than this. As Tim, you mentioned, the second half of this album, it falls starts off incredible, and then it just kind of isn't as good. Yeah. Seasons, from start to finish.
I think that's their best album, Seasons.
Yeah. Born of Fire, I could do without. So, but I mean, and then, you know, there's on South of Heaven, there's a cover, so you could take that out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I
like the cover,
part of the album, but at the same time, if you're looking at that album as the original songs by Slayer, it's, I don't know, I think it's comparable to Seasons by far. And, you know, I don't know.
You're nuts.
I know.
I mean, I don't really think there's much to argue, considering. I mean, even if you don't think Rain and Blood is their best, let's face it, those three are everybody's top four at the very least.
Right.
Very surprised to hear they aren't your top three, because they should be. But
I think God Hates Us All I like better than South of Heaven too.
So I couldn't get into it. I liked it this time, but I listened to it again recently, and I was like, okay, there's maybe two or three good songs.
Go listen to Payback again. The song Payback.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Oh,
that's a good song. Bloodline's a good song. Disciple. Yeah.
Is it a bitch motherfucker?
Yeah.
I mean, but other than the, like, three or four songs on that album, I wasn't digging it. So I think I actually like Christ Illusion better than the album.
Nah.
Yeah.
Tim says no.
Well, that's fine. You can say no.
I mean, I think everything after Seasons is kind of a, you know, it's all up for grabs.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever you say after that, it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah, what about the album that they themselves hate? Musica and
Musica?
Yeah, that song, that album's terrible.
Never.
Yeah. The drums sound really good on it. The production of the drums is really good. And that's about it.
Yeah. And their latest album, I think they just, you know, Tim, you talked about earlier about the fact that they just do, you know, Rain of Blood was just a million miles an hour, just nonstop. They kind of went back to that formula.
They did.
With the new album, and it doesn't work. But I think it's also the fact that there's no more Hanneman. I don't know how much.
Yeah.
I don't even know if any of the stuff on this latest album was written by Hanneman. I don't know if they have
any riffs. I think he added those melodic dynamics that are missing.
Yeah.
In the later stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just sort of lost that. They lost that sort of that groove too that they had going for them. They just went straight into just pure thrash on the last couple albums. It was like, it's fine, but we've heard this before.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're retiring at the right time.
Yeah. Well, maybe kind of even a little late. I mean, let's face it. Jeff Hanneman was probably, I'd say, the most important part of the you know, writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Yeah. It does seem
he
to be
wrote
the case,
every.
Yeah.
He has a writing credit on every song on this album except for the cover.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some are just him.
Yeah, he was a huge part. Yeah. I mean, even looking back at Rain of Blood and the earlier stuff, he was a huge part of the writing process. So,
you know, Slayer's really
lyrics too. Lyrically too.
They're really good at writing those creepy, iconic.
Oh yeah.
Big openings to their songs.
Yeah.
And South of Heaven is definitely in that group.
Oh, yeah.
That riff is so memorable.
Yeah.
It amazes me they can come up with such cool riffs and then be so bad so often on their solos.
the solo work really improved on Seasons.
It did.
Like the song Seasons in the Abyss has some awesome solos in that song. Yeah. It's kind of crazy that, you know, 2 years after, or is it 3 years after South of Heaven, they wrote some really amazing stuff.
Yeah.
I guess 2 years.
Yeah, that was always a big drawback for me was the solos. They get to the solos and it was like, God damn it.
Yeah, well, don't tell Kerry King that. He's better than most guitar players out there, you know.
Right.
So.
And we were coming from the Metallica side of things, which is a little bit more classy. So.
Yeah, I know.
Just things flowed so nicely with Metallica. And then you hear Rain and Blood and it's like, what the hell is happening right now? So it took a little while. I didn't get into Rain of Blood till like, God, like 1990 maybe. I finally went back and I was like, all right, I get it now. But it just took a long time.
I think that might be my issue, is because I was so into this album. This was the album that Tim and I would listen to all the time after school. There's a kind of funny, not really funny story, but
it's not that funny. But
this is actually kind of sad. It's kind of pathetic. what our social life was like back then.
Yeah.
We would come home and there was this puzzle, this giant, like, it was this
guy on a horse.
Yeah,
right?
This knight,
like a
riding
knight
a horse.
Yeah, it's a knight. Yeah.
And we would build this puzzle while we listened to this album.
Yeah, and like put the cassette on like auto repeat and just play South of Heaven over and over and over. We made this puzzle.
Was the puzzle an Armored Saint cover?
Pretty much.
Might as well have been.
It may have been, yeah.
Very similar, yeah.
You should have played them, I guess.
Or Manowar. Yeah.
God.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have revealed that story. That was.
It's okay.
You can edit it out.
Nah.
Nah, leave it.
It's leave fine. It. People can know what kind of dorks we were. It's fine.
It's fine.
So this album featured, it was the first album that featured a clean guitar part too. Spill the Blood has that clean tone guitar in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting.
And South of Heaven too.
Yeah. And I thought the two almost sounded very similar. South of Heaven and Spill the Blood. And then I went and listened to, 213, I think is the name of the song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's named after Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment number.
Yeah,
that's on Divine Intervention. If you go listen to 213 on Divine Intervention, that clean guitar part sounds almost identical to Seasons in the Abyss.
Really?
It's pretty crazy. So you got that. Similar?
Similar.
But that, just that chord progression and the way they're changing it up, sounds very similar. I don't know. Has kind of the same feel, you know?
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
Hey, so I'm reading Scott Ian's book, right?
Yeah.
And he's, this doesn't pertain exactly to 1988, but he was talking about when they did the what was that tour called? Clash of the Titans?
Clash of the Titans, yeah.
I think it was that tour. It might have been.
Go to that too.
It might have been it might not necessarily been that exact tour, but that time frame. So he was saying how Slayer's, their shtick back then was to just like look mean all the time on stage. Like they didn't smile or joke or anything on stage. They looked like, you know, they were, you know, going to kill people when they were on
Nazis.
Stage. And he even said, you know, like, you look at Tom right now, and he looks like a big smiley grandpa bear.
Yeah, he does.
On stage.
He does.
But he's like, back then, Slayer never broke character. So he said for the prank for the finale of the tour, they told one of their roadies to go out and get the big, like, find the biggest fish at the fish market they could get. And they said it was like some 200-pound fish.
Oh, my God.
They hooked it up to a cable right above Tom Araya. So during the end of, I think, maybe Rain and Blood they were playing, or Raining Blood, they lowered it down, the fish down, and it just came down right in front of Tom Araya's face, and he said that the band started to all crack.
There should be footage of that, because that was on Headbangers Ball.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, maybe it was the Headbangers Ball Tour. Maybe that's what it was, the name of it.
Maybe.
Yeah, they did something like that, yeah.
I think that was
with Exodus, though, wasn't it? Wasn't that Headbangers Ball Tour with Exodus?
Yeah, I think that was Clash of the Titans that had the fish.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
You can probably find that on YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
I bet you can, because there's definitely footage of it, because there was a...
Now Joe's looking.
There was a MTV feature on that tour, and they showed the fish coming down. And,
oh, okay. Nice. Yeah.
Oh, so he wasn't lying.
He was not lying. I knew where you were going with that story. I just didn't want to interrupt you.
Liar! Liar! Liar!
God.
Yeah, so this is the second big four band we've talked about. Yeah.
True.
We talked about Megadeth.
We'll be talking about all of them eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They all released an album in 88.
True.
What? So cool.
We'll get to that some other time.
We'll get to that later.
So Slayer.
Slayer.
Oh, wait, no. This, we might be one of switching up here, right? To the
We'll move on. Yeah, move on
to another California band. Want to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Suicidal. How will
distracted
I left
looking
tomorrow.
For this fish footage.
Believe me, it exists. I just, you know, whether or not it's on YouTube, I don't know, but it definitely exists.
Well, I'd say for this album, the one thing that struck me, because, you know, I definitely still listen to Suicidal all the time, but throwing back in, let's face it, I bet Joe Bond loved this album because that first track, you know, Trip at the Brain, I mean, people talk about when rap rock started. It didn't hit me until I re-listened. It starts in Trip of the Brain, like right there as he gets into the bridge. All of a sudden, Mike Muir just starts rapping, and there we go.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
When it happens, you're like, you know, let's face it, back in when I got into Suicidal, I didn't even think about it. Trip of the Brain is a great freaking tune. I mean, this album is a great fucking album.
Yeah.
But you don't realize, just like, you know, a lot of people, when you listen to Blondie's Rapture, you know, she starts rapping and everyone's well, it's Blondie. That's, you know, whatever you want to call it, new wave or whatever. And it's just like, no, she's rapping. Well, in this case, Mike Muir is absolutely rapping.
Yeah, that's crazy. I hadn't thought of that. But that was the song that we heard first off that album. It was on Headbangers Ball. I knew of Suicidal, of course, and I'd heard Join the Army. I didn't like it that much. So this video came on Headbangers Ball, and it was, man, we're like, this is great.
Yeah.
This is way really
different.
Good.
Way different than Join the Army.
Yeah. Yeah. So immediately.
But even Join the Army is way different than
the original, the self-titled.
Yeah.
Their debut.
Yeah.
Sure. Self-titles just pure punk, right? I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, I think we had seen Institutionalized before that too, and we kind of thought it was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
We weren't fans of Suicidal based on that one song. We're like, that was kind of a comical song, but I'm not going to listen to that album, you know?
I don't know if I've listened to Join the Army all the way through ever.
I didn't this time either. Usually, like I said, usually I listen to most of their entire catalog, but I didn't go back and listen to it. I was like, whatever. In fact, you know, Keith said this is an amazing album. I have to disagree on that one. Nah. For me, it didn't stand the test of time for me. I listened to the entire thing and I kind of got bored around Surf and Slam, and after that I just kind of lost interest.
The second half of this album, are you fucking kidding me?
That's I'm with Keith on this.
I think I liked it better than I remembered.
Mm. Yeah. And also lyrically, the lyrics are Mike Muir's lyrics are so direct. I mean, nothing is really metaphorical. It's just like, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sad. Actually, it's more I'm angry at the fact that I'm sad. Is what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
which was basically high school for me. Yeah. So
getting all psychological and shit.
Well, there's only a few bands who can do that. Metallica is another one. Metallica does that really well too. But you're sad, but you're angry about it. You're angry that you're in a situation that's making you sad.
Right.
So it's
I like this because you look at the album cover and you see Mike Muir on there.
Yeah,
and you're like, man, that guy could kick somebody's ass.
Yeah,
and it was cool because you're thinking when you listen to the album, like, he'd probably be friends with me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And he's singing about the same shit that I'm feeling. This is awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I think, Joe, you mentioned this when we were kind of chatting about this a couple of weeks ago, but the fact that there's solos going on and there's like vocals on top of the solos, and you're like, that's not typical for metal bands. Like, you're not
at all
usually hearing a singer sing on top of the guitar solo. So that was definitely interesting, different for a metal band back then. We'll be right back. I mean, their style, if no one listens, if no one knows who Suicidal Tendencies is, their style is definitely different than a lot of thrash.
Well, not to mention how much it evolved. I mean, once Trillo joined the band, I mean, let's face it, as a bassist, and Joe, I'm not sure who you would say, but that guy was fucking incredible. Just the stuff he did in Suicidal and then in Infectious Grooves. I mean, pretty much Infectious Grooves, I think, was built around his talent.
Yeah.
I didn't really like Infectious Grooves that much. Especially Infectious Grooves was that launching pad for Mike Muir to kind of come across as some jackass, you know, philosophical poet that just shut the fuck up. So annoying when he did that shit on stage. You know, as you're saying, Eric, that this is not that great of an album. Yes, there are a handful of tunes on this that are lackluster. I mean, I still think Pledge Your Allegiance is just an anthem.
Yeah, it's
an anthem. You know, I mean, holy shit. Yeah. I mean, that thing sets the fucking tone for this band. I mean, it's...
Well, that's the thing. I loved the first half of it. And for some reason, after Surface Slam, maybe I was just suicidaled out at that point.
Yeah, like, it's a pretty long album.
Side 2 is good, too.
Yeah, if I don't wake up sorry one too many times, the feeling is back. I mean,
those are all great.
I mean, I would honestly agree with you. Surf and Slam is kind of a boring
it's just instrumental.
It's an instrumental, and it's too repetitive, for an instrumental.
And then the CD had Suicidomania.
Yeah,
which is another instrumental right after that. Right before it,
yeah. So maybe that's where I started to lose interest. And maybe, you know, I don't know. I'll go back and listen to it again. I needed to, I don't know. I think that for me, I just am not into this band as much as you guys are. I dig them, but I'm not like, I don't listen to them a lot. Like, I don't go back and listen to this band a whole lot.
Last year, I, you know, was going through my old tapes, and one album I did not have is Art of Rebellion, and I had my wife buy that for me for Christmas, I guess two Christmases ago. And I've been listening. I love that album, even though it's still one that he was just given the green light to just do the stupid, horrible vocal intro. I still love that album.
The first song on that album is very good, Art of Rebellion. Yeah. The first song is really good. And to me, it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
But that's just, that's me.
Well, we saw them with Megadeth on, was it the Lights?
The Countdown to Extinction tour.
Okay. Yeah. And that was 92, wasn't it? Was that the Art of Rebellion?
92, yeah. Art of Rebellion tour, yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a show that for us, we walked away going, these bands are not very good.
I heard the story of that one. Like, Mike Muir pretty much like kind of was like sitting on his knees in front of the stage, just like, oh, and that's when the news going around in your mind, and you gotta be blind all the time.
That's pretty much
He would end it all with,
but you couldn't understand anything.
Exactly.
He said.
It was like,
The sound for both bands that night was just terrible.
The sound, like Dave Mustaine's guitar sounded like pure shit that entire night.
It was like, turn the treble all the way up on his guitar. Yep. Perfect.
No bass whatsoever.
I think there were a couple times where Trujillo did a little bass doodle intro thing, and it sounded really good.
Yeah.
And then it was just noise again. And you couldn't hear the bass during the songs at all.
No, there was absolutely no bass that night. Sad.
No.
I blame the Patriot Center.
I don't know. I saw
I've heard bands sound good there, so I guess I can't do that.
I saw them close Super Bowl Hardcore, which is a hardcore fest that happened at Nation kind of every January. And pretty much, it was probably 2001, maybe 2000, one way or another, Mike Muir starts doing all that lippity shit. And of course, this is Nation, so this is a smaller club, and the crowd is like right in front of him. And we all just kind of just stared at him, shaking our heads like, shut the fuck. And he stopped. He just kind of halfway through his sentence kind of smiled. And then that was the last time for the rest of the show he did any of that crap.
Maybe he wasn't high that night or something.
I don't know.
No, he definitely was
people
high.
People are not.
Because me and Steven, our brother, we saw Suicidal at the Bayou in Georgetown in 1990, and they were fantastic. And that was
I bet.
That was the best club.
Oh, God. And that was one of the most violent pits I've ever seen. Top three. Yeah, I saw broken arms. Bloody noses. It was a mess. I wasn't in the pit. No way. But I saw just absolute carnage coming out of that pit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But suicidal.
Speaking of pits, I should have mentioned that during Slayer. That was...
Oh, Jesus.
We saw them in Michael's 5th Avenue or 8th Avenue.
8th Avenue, yeah. Michael
8th
Avenue.
Oh, my God. Yep. Man, that was a... Like, I was in that pit for 5 seconds.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah. I'm going to die if I don't get out of this now.
That was...
That entire floor was one just, massive. Like, you had to stand all the way to the side.
Have you seen the Jim Brewer stand-up where he talks about when he's at a show and Slayer comes on?
No.
And he's like, these orcs just kind of come out of the ground. Slayer! And they just trample everyone and run up for Slayer.
That's 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. And also, Machine Head opened that show.
Yeah.
That was like the first time we saw Machine Head. And,
yeah.
And Biohazard. Ugh.
Yeah. But we met... Rob Flynn in 2015. Yeah, 15.
And, yeah.
And mentioned that show and he remembered it.
Yeah. Remember, yeah.
I saw you like guys. I was like,
Yeah.
Tim American Tim.
Yeah. We got the VIP tickets to see them.
Yeah. And he's like, were there like chandeliers hanging from the ceiling or something? And we're like, yes, there were.
Yeah. How do you remember that place?
Yeah. How do you remember that? He's like, yeah, I remember that. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, on How I'll Laugh Tomorrow, we didn't bring this up, but this has always bothered me, and we're not going to get an answer to this question, but what is that noise during the chorus?
Which song?
It's like a high-pitched, like, it's almost like feedback, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, which song are you talking about?
The title track.
How Will I Laugh Tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's almost like a dog whistle.
It's like a bell, isn't it?
It's just like this high-pitched whine through the entire chorus.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What is that?
I'm not an audiophile.
Yeah.
It's there on purpose. They put it in there. I just don't know what it is, and I don't know why it's there.
Well,
but who is they? I can't wait to go listen. Because they want you to.
Yeah. They put these things in the song, and they put the Diet Coke with the Pepsi in the song. Yeah.
Yeah. Put a high-pitched wine in there. Yeah. That's probably why it's there. That's reason enough.
Hey, remember when Phil and Selma made fun of him on their one of their DVDs? It was perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
I just want to say, I'm like an animal locked in a cage, and I'm full of rage, and you take some Diet Coke, and you mix it up with some NutraSweet, and you take it to your friends who wear the Suicidal Tendencies t-shirts, and you tell them, hey, you're suicidal, man. What are you? You want to kill yourself or something? And you say, no, man, you know something. People always come up to me and say, hey, man, you're suicidal. You're suicidal. But I say, I'm lovely. Hello, Mike. It's Phil.
What was the number one song when this came out?
Oh, the number one album when this album was released was Def Leppard, Hysteria.
Man, you're like a spot.
Which came out in 87, but I think they must have released Pour Some Sugar on Me as a single, maybe around the like spring or something.
Holy shit, that's the same time as this?
Yeah.
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 88.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love that album.
Oh, God.
When it came out. That was my first concert, man. Def Leppard in Europe. We talked about that.
Yeah, we did.
Another show.
We did.
Yeah. I mean, that's for me is, you know, you guys talk about, you know, 1988. Well, I was just getting into music at this time in my life, you know. My brother's best friend had, like, you know, introduced me to Bon Jovi, and I'm like, okay. I mean, it was better than all the radio shit that, you know, was on the air. I mean, one way or another, my brother, you know, all of a sudden heard Pour Some Sugar on Me, went out, bought Hysteria, bought Pyromania, bought High and Dry, On Through the Night, you know, bought the entire, you know, and then started getting into Rush. So that started introducing me to a lot of stuff. And then, of course, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, you know, the Metallica issue, but, you know, one way or another, we heard the one video, and that was the fucking end of it all. And you know, congratulations, I was a metalhead. But that's when I finally got into all this shit. And you know, kind of getting up during this year in 1988. You know, I was listening to a lot of my brother's Def Leppard albums, and I feel so happy that I never bought any of them. Caved in and got into glam, because I mean, let's face it, there's definitely, I mean, they were a very, you know, rock oriented band, but you could definitely slide the other side of that, you know,
the early stuff
dagger and end up
like High and Dry isn't terrible.
No,
it's just
I still like
it. I'd say High and Dry is their best album, but let's face it.
I would buy Def Leppard now, but just to compare Pour Some Sugar on Me with this album is, it feels insulting in a way.
It's different. That's a different world.
Yeah, completely. I'm sure some listeners will be, you know, hey man, don't bash on Def Leppard. That's a great album.
That's fine.
At the time, it was pretty good, but
apparently it was better than what we're talking about. Number one.
Yeah. General population.
They had how many hits off that album?
Oh, a lot. I don't know.
Animal.
I don't know what other songs were on it.
Animal. Yeah, right?
I thought that album was older.
Love Bites.
Yeah. All right, too love much bites, talking about
Animal. Come on. Guys, let's get back to suicidal tendencies. I mean, let's face it. Def Leppard is.
Yeah, Love Bites. Yeah.
Fuck
Animal.
You.
Oh, yeah.
Def Leppard is shit. Suicidal tendencies got me through the worst parts of my depression and self loathing in my entire life.
Yeah.
Def Leppard.
Did not.
No.
No. They're like the reason for your depression and self loathing.
Come on, man. didn't Love Bites help you through some of your hardest times in your life?
Oh, was that on that album?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Love Bites helped me through all of our breakups that happened in high school because, you know, we were all dating machines, right?
Right.
With our their Testament back patches,
bad skin,
denim jackets,
big goofy glasses, braces,
and the worst hair.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many of us had mullets?
I had a mullet. Yeah.
I mean, we don't even talk about my hair. Let's not even discuss that issue.
Mine wasn't a mullet yet. Mine was
that was
small.
An entirely other.
Yeah, I always said that problem. Good hair.
Yeah, did Joe, anybody Joe had tell you hair. When you were a kid that
that's what friends are for?
did they tell you when you were a kid that high school is going to be awesome and it's like this coming of age experience? And
nobody told me
like
shit.
When you were little, they're like, man, high school is going to be great. It's the best. They told me that, and then you get there and you're like,
who is they?
They just people, just
people,
adult, other adults. Hey, like
they know, are telling you all these ideas.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying?
They said it's tell you the high school's the best.
Yeah,
it's gonna be life altering experience. Yeah,
yeah, coming of age. Yeah,
they say a lot, don't they?
They do.
They sure do. They certainly do.
They certainly do. Yeah, and talk about a disappointment. Yeah. So this album helped with that quite a bit.
We're just in the wrong time of our lives to be going to high school. We're
not
mature enough at that point.
I guess.
Not alone.
Yeah.
This is the part of the show where we're going to talk about Survive.
Survive.
Yeah. Survive
nuclear assault.
Nuclear assault. Yeah. We talked about this earlier. No, we didn't talk about it on the show, but it was released on June 13th. And it peaked at 145 on the charts.
Not good.
And who did it go up against to try to knock out at the top spot?
Oh, yeah.
In 1988.
The number one album that week was Faith by George Michael.
And they did not succeed in knocking that out of the top spot.
Shockingly.
Shockingly. Nuclear assault. We're not able to do it.
Do you want me to bring this to the circle, though?
Yeah, go for it.
So, Faith by George Michael was the number one song. Dan Lilker, who was the bass player for Nuclear Assault, was a founding member of Anthrax, and Anthrax went on to record I'm the Man, which is like the first metal rock. Actually, I guess it's Bring the Noise was probably more metal rock rap,
mm-hmm.
Which was a big influence on Fred Durst, who started Limp Bizkit. Whose first big song was Faith.
That's right.
And Joe Bond knows this because Joe Bond is the biggest rap rock fan. He loves Limp Bizkit.
Pretty big. Pretty big into that. And Creed.
Like Creed. Oh, yeah.
They weren't rap rock.
If they wanted to do it, they would have been the best. I think.
Creed shreds.
I think he's just bringing up terrible things and putting them in one bag.
The bag that is Joe Bond.
It's more of a sack.
Yeah, sack. Yeah.
Oh, SAC.
Yes.
Right. Got it. So this album. Yeah.
Survive. It's a great album. I don't know if it's.
It is their best.
Yeah.
I mean that handle with care. You could also say. I mean, yes. Let's face it. That, you
know, I think their first four albums were almost all equally good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the one's not really an album. So three and an EP.
Yeah.
Yeah, the EP was really good too. Mm-hmm. They came out before this.
But this album is impossible to find now.
Yeah.
It's been out of print since 2012. I
mean,
so
there's a good reason. I mean, I wouldn't say good reason. I mean, this is a very good band. I love it. I mean, Joe Bond, you're the one who actually introduced me to this band.
I didn't know that.
I don't remember. And I love you know, the Zeppelin cover better than Zeppelin. Like, I actually am not a big Zeppelin fan. One way or another. You know, you think about, you know, the Big Five or the Big Four, and who, you know, everybody discusses who's that fifth, and you know, you guys mentioned Testament, and you know, that episode, you know,
Testament, some obviously,
old school guys would say Exodus,
Pantera,
Obituary. No one would ever say Nuclear Assault.
Obituary.
I mean, no. Nuclear Assault is a very good band, wrote some very good albums, but you know, as I mentioned earlier about, like, you know, Pledge of Allegiance being an anthem, they didn't have one. They had no, there's no Welcome Home Sanitarium in there. There's no Hook and Mouth. Yeah. There is, they wrote good music, but it was never great. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they have a couple. They're not.
They've got some great songs, but I mean, when I went back and started listening to this, I'm like, I could sing along with some of the stuff, but right now, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you any of the lyrics. You know?
Yeah. It's sort of like,
no,
you have to be a real true fan of this type of music to get this deep into discovering Nuclear Assault.
I don't know about that. I mean, the connection there to Anthrax, I mean, it was an easy, like, you know, of course I'm going to like this band. And of course I did, but, you know, did I like it as much as Anthrax? Yeah. Fuck no. You know, did I like it as much?
This is just a little bit below those upper bands is what I mean. Like,
as I said, you know, there's the Big Four, and these guys aren't the Big Five. Are they even part of the Big Ten? You know, I mean, that's definitely, what I mean.
You discover this band because you're interested in this form of music.
Even in New York bands, they're not even they're probably what, third?
Yeah, maybe? I like Overkill better than this band. Yeah.
Nah, they're from Jersey. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Dan Lilker. He was a former member of Anthrax. Actually wrote a lot of Fistful of Metal,
which is not a good album.
No. It's not. Different singer. No Joey Belladonna. It's just interesting. Like, he was actually a major part of their...
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, he got kicked out because of that singer who wasn't Joey Belladonna, and then that guy got kicked out because, well, that guy.
He's a dick.
After that guy kicked out Wilker, his name was Neil Turbitt.
Yes, yes,
out,
that's right.
Wilker, and then it was like they just counted the days until they could fire him.
Yeah, he's a dick.
They were so pissed at that.
Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah. This, I agree with Keith. I mean, this is kind of where they peaked. This and
Handle with Care. Yeah,
that's. I think the only difference really is production. I think Handle with Care doesn't sound as good as Survive production wise. I think it's a little
this album
muddier.
Sounds. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Really well produced. And I think that's what pushes it over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The drummers, I mean, the drummer's an excellent drummer.
He is.
Yeah. I kind of had forgotten how talented these guys were.
Yeah.
You know?
So the producer was Randy Burns.
Yeah.
He made it sound so good.
Who also produced Peace Sells. So.
Yeah. Which sounds really good too.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Well produced. So I can tell a story about this album if you guys want to hear a story.
I want to hear it.
It's another high school story.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. No, this is a good story though. So if you were, I guess there was a diploma you could get. There was the high diploma and the low diploma. And if you were Nova bound, you went straight for that low diploma.
Right.
I got the high diploma.
Did you?
No.
I wouldn't do me a whole lot of good.
Minimalist for me. As little credit as I possibly could.
Yeah. So if you were the low diploma guy, there was in Oakton, at least where I went to high school, was Oakton High School.
Tim, I think it was only 2 credits difference, right?
I think it was. Yeah. It wasn't much, it wasn't a big deal, but it just sounds cool. So there was a guy named Old Jack, Old Jack ran the planetarium.
Old Jack.
And then Old Jack.
Sounds like a story about
Yeah, it does, actually.
Old Jack was a nice
although
man.
Although it's not.
Ran the planetarium. Used to turn the lights up real low.
Planetarium.
Come on, Timothy. He didn't take his penis out.
Have a seat here.
See it. Oh, put it in places that we
know. I call this my Big Dipper.
All right. That's enough of that.
My story's ruined.
So old Jack, go on.
Good old Jack.
Good old Jack.
Old Jack was cool.
What the hell was I saying? Oh, yeah. Okay, so there was a class that everyone knew was basically, if you were kind of not doing so well in high school, you took this class in which you didn't really do much of anything other than sit in the planetarium and look at the stars every now and then. And there was no homework. There was nothing. You just hung out. And he was way into Pink Floyd. And our big project for the year was literally, this is no joke, the big project was to make a mixtape and explain why you chose the songs you chose on your mixtape. And that was the greatest project in high school ever. So obviously mine was full of metal. Just the whole thing was metal. He didn't mention that he was going to play the tape in the planetarium and literally blast it. So this was just awesome. I walked in and he's blasting Overkill. He's blasting Drunken Wisdom by Overkill. And I was like, this is the fucking best. And after that on the tape was Brainwashed by Nuclear Assault.
Yeah.
And he's blasting Nuclear Assault in high school. And the lyrics of that song where he's screaming, why don't you think for yourself?
Yeah.
That was like, I was in heaven. That was the greatest day of high school. Just hearing that song, literally in high school, screaming lyrics that I totally believed in. That's my story.
What were the other students' reactions?
It was just him and old Jack.
And old Jack's penis.
The others. Yeah, right. No. Some of them liked it. Some of them didn't really know what was going on. They didn't quite get it.
What is this?
Yeah. There were some Jews in there. Like, this is other, noisy.
Did you have to hear other students' shitty albums too?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All the other tapes sucked except for mine.
So Bon Jovi and
it was a lot of there was one guy who was into Anthrax, so
yeah.
there was a lot of terrible stuff, but mine was, you know, Metallica and Anthrax, Slayer,
George Michael,
yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, I always loved this band, and they were, you know, huge, outspoken liberal
New
Yorkers. Yeah. So it was funny because I think I always liked them better than you guys, since you were the Republican household in high
school. Yep.
I know Steven.
Yeah.
He hated them, didn't he?
No, he liked them. We went to see them together. He just didn't like the lyrics.
What are these stupid libs?
Yeah, pretty much.
But he's always been kind of, I don't know. He's willing to give it a pass if he likes the music, ordinarily.
Not me. If they'd been singing about Reagan, I would have been like, fuck them. I'm not listening to this horse shit.
That's the funny thing for me is back in those days, I was a Reaganite. You know, I love me some conservatism because, you know, I was a dumbass kid.
We learned from our parents, right?
I mean,
at least that's
we all were.
So,
but one way or another, yeah, like listening to you know, this band was like a little like,
Yeah, I know.
And, and then of course,
the greenhouse effect. What is that?
but one way or another, you know, not too long after that, you know, my old lead singer, you know, John got me, you know, born to all these punk bands, and well, let's face it, we all know where that ended. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, lyrically, this was very punk.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very much.
Yeah. And the song Brainwashed, if you listen to it, it's kind of sad. Actually, a lot of the lyrics on this album still apply today, which is kind of sad. Yeah. I mean, that lyrics, if you look at the lyrics to Brainwashed, you can read them and go, yeah, that still applies.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed in 30 years.
Yeah.
It's just missing mentions of Facebook, but that's the only thing it's missing. It's like mentions of social media, but it's the same concept.
Yeah.
It's people just getting this echo chamber and, you know, spouting off. Well,
yeah, the whole thing mentioning the radio, it's like, I remember radio.
Yeah, exactly. Take radio out.
This is in 1988.
Right. Replace that with Facebook and you're off and running, so.
All Music gave this album 3 out of 5 stars, so fuck them.
That's stupid. You're stupid.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that Glenn Cummings, who was in Ludacrist mm-hmm. and Scatterbrain, mm-hmm. helped write the song Technology.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know
yep.
that.
Yep.
How about that?
That's a Wikipedia fact for you.
Yeah, John Connolly was kind of in that camp.
He was on he was on Scatterbrain's first album.
Yeah.
He sang
that
song.
Yeah, yep. So that makes sense.
The other thing I noticed about this album is the guitar sound on this one got so much better than their previous albums.
Yeah. Oh, the first album.
Oh my God, it's not even distorted.
I know.
How is this thrash? It's like, you can't even tell it's, yeah, that was amazing. Going, going from Game Over to this album, I was like, man.
Yeah, Game Over to The Plague, actually, because the EP, The Plague, which I
bought. Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, I bought that just because I had the first album and I liked it. It was okay. Hmm. And I saw The Plague at a record store. I was like, oh, I'll buy it. And I put it on and it was world of difference.
Yeah.
Sound-wise. Yeah. Like they had proper bass tone, a proper guitar tone. The drum sounded good.
Yeah.
It was quite
a change. I don't remember the first album sounding that bad. I'll have to go back.
I'll listen to, the guitar.
Yeah, the guitar sounds terrible.
It's so thin and just weird.
Yeah.
You saw them live, right, Tim?
Yeah. Yeah, a number of times.
And you weren't impressed?
No, only because I think they didn't have a lot of money. And
still don't.
No, they don't. And they just didn't have the equipment to give you a good mix. So it just was a wall of noise. I mean, if you knew the songs, it was okay because you could, in your head it's playing. But
you remember their VHS, the live
video they had? The one from Brixton Academy, was it?
No, that's Faith No More.
What was the?
I think it was it Hammersmith?
Maybe it was Hammersmith.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
It was definitely in England somewhere.
Well, I bought it at like Sam Goody or something, and the guy that was the cashier, he's like, have you seen them live? I'm like, no. He's like, well, this is not a very good representation of them live. I was not impressed, apparently. I love the video, though.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were a little sloppy.
Yeah, they were a little sloppy. So,
very energetic, though.
Yeah. I never saw them live.
Little John Connolly running around all over the stage.
Yeah.
Yep.
The guitar is as big as him.
Yeah, that's right.
The guy's like 4'11", right?
Gotta be. That guitar is literally almost as big as he is.
I know. I think Dan Wilker is fairly tall.
Yeah, he's like 6'7".
That guy's like 6'6".
Yeah. Imagine if John Connolly and Dan Spitz were in the same band together. You'd think it was like a...
little person man.
Like, what's going little on? Kings. But then, I mean, like, if Dan been. Wilker was in the band...
Yeah. They could have been. They all.
I know. That's what's weird.
The same area.
Yeah. Maybe they were like, hmm.
Well, Keith, you mentioned Good Times, Bad Times. I thought it was interesting that they didn't really. Obviously, the vocals are different, but musically, they didn't change it up that much. It's pretty basic as far as the music.
It's a flat out cover. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
It's a shit ton more distortion than Zeppelin used, but.
Really good, though. One of my favorite covers from a thrash band. Love that song.
And I like what he did with the drums on that song. Mm-hmm. I remember just thinking, that's cool. I didn't know you could kind of... Just the beats he was doing... This is 88, so I was still learning about stuff. And it was just... To hear those beats he was doing was like, huh. He's doing a lot of, like, writing stuff and then hitting the toms twice. Like, do-do-do-do. You know, stuff like that. It was just kind of unique. Because he's doing a Zeppelin cover, so you're going to get... Some oddball stuff.
This is Glenn Evans. Is the
drummer. Glenn Evans. Yeah.
Yep.
I always thought he was a very good thrash drummer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's
like Rocky George. We don't talk about as a major thrash guitarist probably as much as we should. He should be recognized more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
You wouldn't say Louis Herrera was should be.
Who's that from Suicidal?
Yeah, it's Suicidal's drummer up through.
The drumming on that album is
it's good.
Yeah, he wasn't bad.
Let's face it,
Suicidal, suffered.
Testament's guy. I mean, that guy was...
Oh, Louis Clemente?
Louis Clemente, yeah. He was not the best drummer.
He did not give a shit.
That's one thing of all those old albums for those guys. He wasn't all that good. I mean, they definitely upgraded after him and the albums.
Yeah, it makes you wish they had
like Gene Hoagland. Yeah.
Gene Hoagland. That's why their live albums are so good.
Yeah.
They have a better drummer on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does make it fun to play along to the songs, though, on drums, because it's really easy.
Yeah.
Okay, this is fun.
Yep.
Hey.
Well, cool.
In August of 2014, the magazine Revolver placed Survive on its 14 thrash albums you need to own list.
Good.
Yeah.
They're right.
Might be number 14.
Probably.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know if it's, yeah. That'd be interesting to make that list. I don't know.
It made our list, right?
Yeah.
It did. Yeah,
for 88, true. Yeah.
So, for 88, yeah.
As stated, you know, like, I would definitely, you know, they wouldn't make my top five.
No.
They might squeeze into the top 10. They'd definitely be in the top 15, though. You know?
Yeah.
Because they were a good band that I definitely enjoyed. I definitely think is worth it. But
if I'm going to narrow my ranking down to thrash metal bands, they'd probably be in my top 10. But like all my favorite bands of all time, they're maybe in my top 30.
Yeah, sure. But they had the same problem a lot of bands did, where they hit a peak and then they really, really fell off hard.
Yeah.
Something wicked.
Something wicked was
not, I mean, they just went whoop and then just.
Yeah, that was weird.
I'm just.
Yeah, that was probably drugs.
Probably. But even what's the album? Oh.
Or actually, it's probably Sobriety.
That's the.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the album that came out after Handle with Care?
Out of Order.
Out of Order. That album is horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that album.
But Tim, that album cover, man.
Oh, yeah. That's
so bad. This is only 2 years after Handle with Care came out.
That album cover's like you had an art project.
Yeah.
You had an art project in 1986.
Yeah.
Yeah, you talk about they had no money. They really had no money for that. Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, they're spending it on the drugs.
I guess. And that was followed up by Something Wicked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were they a drug band? I know probably weed, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Didn't they kind of preach cleanliness?
They may have, yeah.
Taking care... I don't think they lived it, but...
I mean, 91 was a weird year anyway for a lot of bands, so...
Yeah. 90s changed things.
Hey, Randy Burns produced Nuclear Handle with Care also.
Oh, okay.
Really? That's interesting, because it doesn't sound nearly as good as Survive.
No.
He did not produce Out of Order.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
So, yeah.
Cool. Should we move on to honorable mention? Our honorable mention this episode? We didn't mention it at the beginning of the show, but this one is an honorable mention that...
Keith wasted upon.
Yeah.
It
was on our list.
It should be on your list. I mean, how could you not? I mean, this is...
Well, go ahead, Keith. You tell us what the album is we're talking about.
All right. We're talking about Queensryche's Operation Mindcrime. Pretty much the best, you know, concept album.
No.
Pretty much all of metal. I mean, the storyline.
Wrong.
The storyline is good. The music is there. I mean, how could you not fucking love this album?
You're gonna put that up against Seventh Son of a Seventh Son? I mean, come on.
Yes.
No.
Oh.
Wow.
Wrong. Oh.
Wait.
Okay. It is well done. That's not.
Just no. It's a very well done album.
Really well produced. And it is definitely Queensryche's best album.
Oh, I mean,
100%.
Not even close.
Yeah,
not even close. Yeah. No, it's not a bad album. I wouldn't say that. I wasn't into this band.
It's not
so.
A bad album. Fuck you.
Well, tell us why it's so good, Keith.
Yeah.
Other than the concept.
I don't. Well, I mean, I like it. I mean, I
well,
don't
there you have it, folks.
It's good because I like it.
The book I chose to read was called Operation Mindcrime, and it is a good book, and I think you should go read it.
It's good because I like it.
Thank you.
I mean, I guess you could say I do not have any, you know, solid reason behind, besides, you know, just that, I mean, I can't even compare it to any of the rest of Queensryche, because it's the only one I actually own.
No, it stands out. I've heard other Queensryche stuff, and I mean,
Empire's a... It's a good album. Yeah. It's got, you know, their biggest hits on it, if you could really call
it. Does?
Well,
which was Empire, the one after?
Silent Lucidity.
Silent Lucidity was their biggest hit, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was... And Jet City Woman.
Yeah.
Jet City Woman.
Yeah. That song.
It's an all right song.
Yeah.
And it's rock song. Let's talk about Def Leppard again, you know?
Yeah.
Better than...
That was...
Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yeah,
it is.
But one way or another, I mean, I just say the storyline that they get into is I think, a good story. Let's face it, the best song on the album is the last. Like, it does, I think, kind of crescendo up to that point where Eyes of the Stranger is just,
that is,
you know,
a good song.
Kind
it gets
of
better.
That's good.
Better as you go.
And it closes kind of the whole, like, you know, at the end of it, you know, he just, you know, killed his best friend and who he was boinking, you know.
Yeah.
and I think he ended up, didn't he end up going back and killing Dr. X? I think, who knows? One way or another, he's looking at himself.
Right.
Through the eyes of a stranger.
That's right.
And that's when they knew that they were.
Okay, yeah. Anymore,
yeah, man.
Yeah. So. So one way or another.
Yeah.
One way or another. Okay. You guys obviously have no taste, so you
No, I like the album. I just don't think it's okay. So in 88 I was looking for, you know, like I wanted stuff that was great vengeance and furious anger. and this wasn't, you know.
No.
Right. This was more just like, okay, you know.
I mean, the music's solid. I would honestly have to say, I mean, back in those days, I always thought Jeff Tate was probably the most talented vocalist of the time frame. His range was there. I mean,
he's up there.
I mean, let's face it, King Diamond has got the falsetto that no one can touch, but I really think Tate actually had a range and ability that most sure other vocalists, I mean, let's face it, you look at Joey Belladonna, that guy could fucking sing, and that's what did him in as the, you know, singer of Anthrax, you know? They needed somebody who was, you know, rage and
yeah,
fury. Impressive. Yeah.
Oh, Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Maiden, let's face it, they're different, you know.
They're on another level, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite song on the album was Sweet Sister Mary.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I'm probably listening to this album maybe once or twice ever. So going back and listening to it now, I totally did not remember the song, and it's really cool. Like the female vocals in that song are really cool, and the way they play off Jeff Tate's voice is really good. And it's a really good song. So I did dig that one. And Eyes of a Stranger, that's still a good song.
I like that has the Pink Floyd thing, Eyes of a Stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's yes. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but that's Pink Floyd at the very beginning.
And did we figure out which Pink Floyd song it is that it sounds like?
I couldn't figure it out. I don't know if it just sounds like Pink Floyd or if it actually is a Pink Floyd song. I couldn't really figure it out, but yeah.
Yeah, well, obviously there was a big influence on them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah, no doubt.
Is it Breaking the Silence, Eric, we were talking about? Or no?
The Pink Floyd thing?
No.
There's one song on here that sounds like the vampire rock opera that the guy was writing in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. You know what I'm talking about? Hopefully.
Keith doesn't look amused. He's like, motherfucker. Shut the fuck up. To compare that band to.
I'm going to start throwing punches.
Stupid 2000 comedy movie.
Good thing you're sitting far away from me.
Oh, the night she died. Why? Why? Bye. Bye. Bye.
And they toured with Metallica on this tour.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So was this one of the first big like progressive metal albums, or I'm just not a progressive metal fan, so I don't know the history of progressive metal, but would you put this up there as like a
I would, you know, it's interesting. I think maybe because when I was listening to this, it kind of reminded me of listening to Dream Theater, where mm-hmm. you respect the music and you respect the fact that they're very talented.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of going, I just
isn't progressive music like the songs are very long and have a lot of parts.
These are
pretty short.
Yeah.
But it had that feel to it though. Like
that
it had
kind
like
of Tim technical... said that.
It was I think it was too well done in a way.
Yeah.
This is too good for me.
But it's
No, not that. It's just it's slickly produced and the music's just like everything's squeaky clean about it.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I own the album. I mean, I bought it. I own it to this day. So obviously I like it enough to buy it, but, you know,
it was nerdy.
It was huge. I mean, I remember Headbangers Ball played those videos all the time.
Oh yeah.
They were a huge band from like 87 to 92 ish. Yeah.
Maybe earlier than that. Maybe like 85.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the stuff, I mean, they were around,
yeah,
you know, before this, but, you know, Rage for Order, God, what the hell are the other albums? I mean, like, their earliest stuff, I don't own any of it.
No, I don't either.
What was the album with Close to You? Remember that weird song?
Yeah, yeah, that's
like
right.
Close to You.
Yeah, and it was all weird, like, I want to get close to
you. Oh, that's the one before this, Rage for Order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember that? It was very 80s.
Yeah, yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
Whoever wrote that song was not in the band, so maybe that's why it sounds weird.
Yeah, I didn't go back and listen to their older stuff, so I can't tell. Like, I couldn't tell you if there was a major
shift
in the music. There was. But that stuff was, I mean, yeah, it was, you know, fine.
Yeah.
It was music.
Yeah.
But, you know,
that's some music.
Operation Mindcrime is the easily, you couldn't even call it the peak. It's the, you know, the spike,
the pinnacle
of their,
yeah,
yeah,
of their career. I mean, let's face it, of course, you know, Empire sold more than God knows probably everything else they've ever put out times 10.
Yeah.
But, and they've, you know, I mean, the hilarity of what happened to these guys, of course, you know, Doug, let's face it, you know, lead singer marries woman becomes band manager. Their stepdaughter became the head of the fan club, and next thing you know, you know, the drummer and the bass player, of course, get fucked over, and you know they don't get a say.
You
in think anything.
If they didn't learn from the Beatles, they'd at least learn from Spinal Tap. I mean, come on, guys. No,
these bands never learn.
What was the number one song when this came out, or was this?
I didn't look that up. Don't know.
But you just remembered. I thought you remembered.
No, I don't know.
You were like Rain Man with that shit.
I can Google it. Yeah.
Hurry up.
Let's see, May 2nd, 1988 is when it was released. So top.
I got May 3rd.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was a day off. So May 2nd or 3rd, depending on your source. That would be the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Oh, oh. Jesus fucking fuck.
Are you shitting me?
No. That was number one from March 12th all the way through May 14th.
All of our wives own that fucking thing.
Oh, yeah, they do.
All of our, no, not my all wife. Our mothers nope. own that fucking thing.
Mom, yeah, but my wife does not.
My wife does.
Man, no, if you want to get depressed really quickly, go look at the top albums from 1988.
My mom had two of the fucking soundtracks to that. I was like, how was there two?
Yeah, there was two. That's right. Pam has told me that.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look
horrible
from like so first part of 1988 from January 1st through the 16th, the Dirty Dancing soundtrack was number one.
Wow.
And then it became number one again in March. Why am I talking about the fucking Dirty Dancing soundtrack? God damn.
I thought this we were talking about metal, man. Fuck this. I quit. I'm out.
Dirty Dancing, Def Leppard. What the fuck is this show?
So how can we tie those albums together?
I don't think you're going to do that.
Let's not try.
Any other interesting tidbits about Queensryche or Operation Mindcrime? The only other note I made is that one of the songs sounded like Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, you mentioned the
song Spreading the Disease, about the 220 mark. Sounds just like Inner City Pressure by Flight of the Conchords. Sex are power plays, manipulate the people for the money they pay. Selling skin, selling God, the numbers look the same on their credit cards. Inner city life, inner city pressure, the concrete world is starting to get you. The city is alive, the city is expanding, living in the city can be demanding. You've pawned everything, everything you own, your toothbrush jar and a camera phone. You don't know where you're going, you cross the street. You don't know why you did, you walk back across the street. In the sitting room, totally skint in your favorite jerseys. I don't. I would say the spoken word part of that is you know, justifiably, you know, works today as much as it did in 1988. Very, very poorly.
I think we can all agree there would be no Hamilton if it weren't for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a big influence on. What's his name? Lin-Manuel Miranda, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you nailed that name. Good job.
Thank you.
Do you want to mention that there was a part two of this album?
No.
Oh, God.
No.
I don't think we should, because...
there was a part two.
That was a money grab.
Yeah, we mentioned it.
That's part two.
That's it. You don't need to know any more.
How about this?
Let's face it. You don't really need to know too much more about Queensryche besides this album.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a band called Operation Mindcrime.
Are they a cover band?
Cover band?
I assume.
This is like, that's like naming your band Master of Puppets.
I know, it's a little weird.
There might be something going on there with Jeff Tate and that whole breakup and that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's his solo band.
Yeah, I think
that's his Queensryche.
I think he might have quit and then formed Operation Mindcrime.
Well, I know that there was a huge legal battle between him and the band, because he continued touring as Queensryche with, you know, random schlubs, and pretty much, I believe, pretty much only playing Operation Mindcrime over and over again. and then, you know, let's face it, the lawsuit kind of came down. The rest of the band won the right to have the name. He won the right to, I guess, use his lyrics or some it's weird. Huh. But,
yeah, there's a disambiguation.
Yeah.
With them. It says, for the band featuring former Queensryche singer Jeff Tate, see Operation Mindcrime Band.
There you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what it is.
I don't want to see that band.
No.
I kind of do now. In a morbid way.
That's what YouTube's for.
Well, you know, the singer
from... You can't even find the fish from the Slayer show on YouTube.
You can't find it? That sucks. There's footage somewhere.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
A lot of fishing videos.
I'm so taping fishing.
Somewhere in time podcast. Whoever finds that fish video first.
Wednesday.
Sweet old, what's that guy's name? Old
Jack.
Old Jack. In the planetarium.
It's a smoke weed with old Jack in the planetarium.
He's long since passed.
And while you're listening to, can listen to some Nuclear Assault.
Yeah. We'll send you a link where you can buy this album by Nuclear Assault.
If he was old Jack in 88, he's dead Jack now.
He actually is, yes.
Yeah, correct, unfortunately. Yeah. Unfortunately. Sad.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else on this?
So, we end on death.
Is that the way it always goes?
Seems fitting.
Yeah.
So tune in next time when we talk about death.
Well, there's a Slayer thing I can bring up. There's a Slayer thing that, remember we were saying that, like, Suicidal and those bands kind of helped us through high school?
Yeah.
There's an interview with Slayer from, I think it's 87, and Jeff Hanneman saying, you're not going to feel this music unless you have a few problems in your life. It's not going to make sense to you.
They got to start getting used to it.
They got
to
feel the aggression.
Yeah,
you got to feel it.
Music's got to grow.
Because if you're like living a nice lifestyle and you have no problems, you put on a record, you know, our record, and you won't get it. You got to have some problems.
It's just funny that he says that. You're like, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We definitely have problems.
I think people who listen to Dirty Dancing have problems.
They have problems.
They just don't admit it.
Yeah, exactly.
Keith said this is the best conceptual album ever, so he definitely has problems.
Better than Seventh Son, he says.
You know what?
Good one.
I like them better than that album.
Damn.
If we're talking about that album, it's going to be me and Eric just sitting here basically by just drinking
I'm
beer.
Talking about Operation Mindcrime.
Okay. Doesn't matter, because if you're talking about King Diamond...
Oh, yeah. I tuned out.
I'm saying Keith and Joe can talk about it, and Eric and I will be like, okay.
Yeah. That'll be the Keith and Joe episode.
Yeah.
Operation Mindcrime is cheesier to me than King Diamond's them.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Now that's a statement.
Grandma!
I can't find the Slayer.
Sucks. You're still searching for that fucking shit.
Yeah. Joe's like half paying attention the entire episode. He's just like trying to find that goddamn fish.
I should have waited until the end.
I took a break to make fun of Queensryche.
Yeah. Well,
I was actually totally expecting you guys to be just like just destroying them nonstop. No. But now I'm very glad that at least one of you has common sense.
I don't know. I didn't like the Suicidal album as much as you guys did, so
you have to go back and listen again.
Yeah, I do.
You're missing out.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're in the wrong mood,
yeah,
for any album, it's true. Just it's not going to work.
Is that their best album?
Suicidal?
Yeah, I think it is.
I mean, maybe. Let's face it.
Lights, Camera,
is my favorite. Not Lights, Camera. Control by Hatred, Feel Like Shit is actually my favorite. But that's a weird album.
It is, yeah.
It is.
But Lights, Camera is I mean, those three are, you know, let's face it. When every one's band we're fucking talking about here pretty much had albums in like 87, 88, and 89. Yeah. And all three of those albums are the ones that are like, you know, pretty much the most. Those 3 years in metal are the most important 90, years.
For 90s or two.
90 was huge. All right.
Yeah.
That was Pantera's debut. Was there, yeah.
And rest in peace.
Well, no, it wasn't their debut.
Well, as a real band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about almost their.
They're
what was that? Power metal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So, Queensryche is the best.
No.
That's Keith's top album from 1988. Congratulations.
Ever.
Where would you rank that, Keith? If you were having would that be in your top five of albums from 88?
It would definitely, I would say, you know, looking over everything in here, it's definitely in my top six. You know, I think that is just an incredible classic album. It's got, you know, a great vocalist that does stuff that, you know, is cool. You know, not a lot of other metal bands were able to have someone that talented do stuff because, I mean, look at Nuclear Assault. He just kind of does that, you know, weirdo fucking vocal, you know, effect.
Yeah. And,
you know. That's because he's not a good singer, though.
Exactly.
All right, let's end this shit.
Yeah.
Fuck. Right. Yep.
This has gone on long enough.
Yes. So, social media shit. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/somewhereintimepodcast. We're on the Twitters. It's SIT Music Podcast is our handle, and instagram.com/somewhereintimepodcast.
Were you talking to me?
Talking to anyone who's listening. And
talking to the guys.
12 of you.
Oh, okay, good. Because I don't have Facebook. So
yeah. And all of our stuff's 100% free and,
yeah. You can find us on iTunes. Just search for Somewhere in Time Podcast.
Yeah, you can give us money if you want, though, right?
Sure.
Feel free to do that, yeah.
Reach out to us. Find us I'm on social media way too often, so find me there and say, hey, you want some money? I'll say, sure.
Somebody really send that link to the Slayer Fish thing.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find it. I mean, I don't want to say, I have it on VHS somewhere. It would take a long time to find it.
All right, let's end this shit. Let's just get out of here.
Bye.
Bye, peoples. See you later.
Energy, aggression, power.
To sum it up, it's a
vulgar display of power.
Metal and certain other forms of rock give teenagers something to believe in that they get no place else.
The human element of making music is what's most important. Singing into a microphone and learning to play an instrument, that's the most important thing.